Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode, I meet artist blacksmith Heather McClarty of Los Angeles, California, USA. We talk about her journey in the craft and her involvement in the popular TV series The Mandalorian. The episode was recorded on Instagram Live, Sunday, 28 May, 2023.
My friend Esther is, I told them about this weeks ago, and they are a huge fan of the series, so they're getting very excited about this. I was the first person to join. Hi, everyone. So just want to say welcome to my guest today, Heather McClarty, artist, blacksmith, who resides in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's really lovely to have you on. I'm so sorry to have you up so early. I didn't realise what the time difference is between us. I'm here in the UK, you're on the other side of the US. So it's early... fairly early morning for you, and it's the evening for me here. So my first question I want to ask you is, having interviewed, you know, lots of artists and artisans and people who end up in all kinds of wonderful professions, there are no linear paths to anything, but I want to know how you got into blacksmithing. How did it happen?
Of course, a circuitous route. I started out as a prop builder,
right,
or live theater, and ended one of the actually the first professional theater I worked at was on the Central Coast of California, and they did a lot of steel work. They did actually rotating rep and things, so. 8 shows in 3 months, and we never played the same show twice in a row. They would switch every night, and there were two theaters. Yeah, it's crazy. Two theaters, 35 miles apart. And so it was all 8 shows, like going back and forth from theater to theater all the time. So that's a long-winded explanation for why there was a lot of steel work instead of wood frame flats with muslin cover. We did thin wall steel tubing flats with hard cover, so Luon on top, and things painted so it wouldn't get thrashed going back and forth in the truck. So pretty much if you were a technician there, which I was, you learned how to weld. So I learned steel fabrication. I'm 65 now.
Oh, wow.
I was...
I had no idea.
I was 20 when I learned fabrication. And then, so I worked in the theater as a prop builder for, and props for anybody who doesn't know are like the things that the actors touch and use. So from furniture and soft goods like draperies and that kind of stuff to like a cup or a pen or food on stage or animals are sort of specialized props. So it was always different all the time. I learned to work in lots of different materials. But I really loved the steel work. The steel work was super fun to me. And then after that, I worked in a lot of big regional theaters up and down the West Coast, from Denver all the way up to, in Tucson and San Francisco, Oregon Shakespeare and Alaska, and then back down to California. And I was always the one prop person who knew how to weld, so I'd get all the steel projects. And then eventually, I moved in with a man who's now my husband, and We struggled for a while, but then he started doing well enough that I could quit that job. And what I really wanted to do was just the steel. And then I worked backwards technologically, because when I started figuring out what I wanted to make, all the coolest stuff was forged. But this was way, this would have been like 1991. And there was no YouTube, there was no Google. I didn't have a cell phone still for years. So I was trying to teach myself like out of books and stuff. And
You're
eventually,
self-taught.
to start with, yeah. And then I found Abana first, the American national organization. And that was just mind-blowing to me. Got to see other people doing it. It was just like so amazing. And then my education picked up speed then. Once you can have an actual physical teacher teach you, it's a game, right?
Yeah.
So.
That's like, what you've just described, it reminds me of a lot of folks in the community that I operate in, the historical fencing community. During the pandemic, obviously people were in a similar position where they just didn't have anyone. Everything, they didn't have anyone that they could visit. We weren't allowed to visit anybody.
Right.
And lots of people discovered it probably is the same with steel and working with metal as well, and lots of other crafts where they discovered this thing, they want to learn it. There's nobody around to teach them. Different now because you've got, like you say, there's YouTube, there's other resources online, but people in the historical fencing community spent a long, maybe even a year at times, trying to teach themselves how to fence. Of course, you cannot compare that to actually having an instructor to work with you. So
Yeah.
yeah, that must have been a huge step up in your career.
Yeah, for sure.
Um,
And we're
so
excited
yeah.
other people who were excited about the same things.
So was that just you, or were you working one to one with your with a mentor, or were you doing classes?
I went to the Abana conference. Moves around. It's only every 2 years, and it moves around the country, which is huge. It's never in California, but it just happened that, like, I went to a craft fair and there was a blacksmith there. I talked to him and I said, how do you learn this? And he told me about there was going to be a conference in San Luis Obispo, which is like 3 hours from where I was living, 3 hours drive. And that, I mean, it just never happened. It was incredibly lucky for me. Like I said, there was no online information.
Yeah.
So I called the Chamber of Commerce in San Luis Obispo and they gave me the Abana number. I just signed up blind, went, and so there was lots of hands-on stuff. There were classes there, just like one-offs, right? But nobody was taking them, so I was getting in on classes, which was so afterwards, in retrospect, I realized everybody else there, these were all like super beginner classes, right? Everybody else there already knew what the hell they were doing.
Oh, okay.
So
So you were very lucky. You weren't just having to fight off any other beginners.
yeah. I mean, the classes were full, but they had room for like 16 people because they had a farrier school there. So they had a good setup. And then I got then I through that I was able to find the state organization, the California Blacksmith Association, and then found a more local place in Orange County, and I started taking classes there once a month. So, yeah.
Do you continue to take classes, or are you the person giving the classes these days?
Well, some of each. There's always more. So, when I first started coming out of props, where I felt like jack of all trades, master of none, coming out of a prop shop. So I knew how to use all kinds of materials lots of times in ways that they were never intended to be used.
Not only because you were trying stuff out, I guess, rather than intentionally.
Making fake stuff, like they were real enough to last, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 weeks, right, with an actor using them. But that's all, then everything's thrown away, you know. So it's not the same thing as making things for real people in real life. And that's, I became really attracted by that, of having it be, you know, more, a more permanent thing. And I also really wanted to focus on sort of one material, so that I had a more deep standing of that material. So, because otherwise I'm like ADD girl, like, you know, ooh, something shiny over here, you know.
Let's do another black. ADD person.
So I sort of made a rule for myself that I've stuck to pretty well, of doing only metal. I mean, I do include other materials sometimes in my work, but for instance, if I love glass and metal together, if I do that, I will hire a metal artist to do the glass, and we might work together, but I try not to get too distracted by the glass part.
I've got enough to do. I don't want to have to learn how to do that as well.
That's right.
So you said that you went from working with making stage props materials, mostly metal materials, which were sort of transient, ephemeral things that were meant to be only used for a short while, and then you were drawn to the permanence of making permanent objects out of only metal. Mm-hmm. The kind of art that you do, just describe to us the kind of art that you do and what inspires you to make it.
When I started, I started doing furniture, and I sort of like that size thing. I found that a little bit, I guess, more difficult to sell. What I do a lot of sort of nature-based work, I would say. I almost all on commission. So that means I'm working with a client, and it's almost always site-based. So someone will come to me and say, I need a gate. So I will arrange to go to their place, meet with them, see what the house and the site looks like, and talk to them a little bit. But talking to them is, it varies how useful that is, actually. But seeing where they live and what they have around them is really important. And what, you know, clearly what they like. Some people have a pretty good idea what they want, but most people who come to me because they like my work, what they've seen of my work somewhere, either online or in person. And sometimes they come to me thinking, oh, I want a gate like that one that I saw. And then I gently talk them into something else, because I hate making the same thing more than one. And so far that's been pretty successful.
I like that. One of my questions that I didn't include was going to be, what's the most popular thing that people ask you to make? I love the fact that you gently nudge them away from that. Sort of, how about this?
One thing that I learned the hard way is don't, if it's a couple, if it's, you know, if there are two people involved, you have to talk to them both.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Really, really different ideas about what they do and don't want.
Nothing like unspoken expectations, eh?
Right, right. So yeah, that's key. That's a key. Talk to both people.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the things, it's really funny because I don't, I certainly don't focus on having a style, but I was showing a friend something. We were talking about, you know, possible projects for classes. And so I do teach now some, not a lot, but once in a while. And I showed her a picture of this thing and said, what about something like that? And she said, oh, that's so you. And I was like, oh. I don't think of myself as having a strong style, but apparently I'm wrong about that.
So your style is mostly, well, it sounds like you get asked to make stuff that's like typically like gates or features in people's land, on their property, and it seems to have a kind of nature theme to it.
Yeah, a lot of it does. To me, the hand forging, I won't take just a fabrication job, something that's cut and weld, right? That's, to me, what's important now is, what I love the most is how squishy metal is, right? When it's hot, it's...
I like that quote. It's squishy. It's cute.
Yeah. It's, when it's the right temperature, which is for steel about 2000 degrees, so hotter than red hot, it gets plastic like clay. You just can't touch it with your hands, right? So not effectively. So you know what I love is figuring out how to squish it around using the hammer and the anvil, mainly. I mean, there are other tools certainly that come into play, but it's all about, I think of the material as clay, and I just imagine like what tool I need. If I were gonna squish it with my thumb like this, so how do I back it up? And what kind of tool will approximate that? You know, smushing. So, a lot of smushy work.
One day they're going to invent, like, some hands that will replicate your hands and you can smush
right.
It. So, with your job, you know, from the age of 20, you're working with metal. And that's, you know, since then you've been inspired to work with metal and you continue to be in love with this material and this media. It sounds like your dream job. It sounds like a dream job. But what, it's a blacksmithing, as we all know, is a very traditionally masculine, male-dominated field, an ancient craft. What obstacles did you personally have to overcome in order to get there?
Well, I feel like I was incredibly lucky in where I live and where I'm working. I'm a member of SIBS, the Society of Inclusive Blacksmith, which is a fantastic organization. And I was in this incredible group of 11 women, and we built a bench together. So we, over like 3 or 4 days, it seemed like longer, but it was very intense. We worked together and cooked for each other and ate together. So we spent like pretty much all our hours together. And we had these discussions about that question, what it's like being not looking like the person that people imagine in their head as the blacksmith, right? In either by race or, you know, by gender, all kinds of different ways. And during our discussions, it became fairly clear that the challenges were greater depending on where people lived. Mm. So it tended to be people that lived in the Deep South, in the Midwest, had a much more difficult time being accepted as women in the field. Those of us who learned and practiced on the West Coast had a much easier time and had a lot. I think we all felt like we had a lot more support mm-hmm. when we showed up, and people were super, other Smiths were super generous with me. It's different, I have to say, going in a welding store, for instance. I do fabric still, I forge the parts that I make. I don't always use traditional techniques to assemble. That varies, but so some of the pieces I fabricate together. So I do frequent welding supply places and, you know, air gas and hardware stores and that kind of stuff. And it's a different thing going in those places. You know, you get a little, especially if I go in with my husband, who does none of this, yeah. right? My husband actually sews, which I hate. I hate sewing. So if we go, if he happens to be with me and we go in a welding supply store, they will go up to him and ask if they can help him. And he'll say, you have to ask the blacksmith. and I feel like also it's actually been a little bit of a selling point for me as an artist, selling my work, and that maybe because of the particular niche that I'm in, that I think people love telling their friends, you know, when they complimented their gate or whatever they bought from me, oh yeah, and that's made by a woman blacksmith in a teepee, you know. People love having clients love having a story to tell about a piece, right? Yeah. That's partly what they're buying, really.
A story. Like you say, we haven't mentioned the teepee, but you do all your work in this enormous, amazing teepee. The folks that are watching this now, you might have seen it in the background of the picture that I put up of Heather advertising this live stream, but she's actually forging inside a teepee in her backyard, which is amazing. Did you say your husband built that for you?
Yeah, he sewed. So that's how he started.
Amazing. My next question, like, having all this experience, like, what's that, 45 years of experience, what advice would you give to anyone else looking to do what you do? Especially if it, you know, a young woman looking to get in, or anyone looking to get into this, you might say, is this for me?
Right. Take as many classes as you can. This is just my personality. I really like taking classes from as many different people as I can. So that's a good start. I think if I had known then what I know now, I would probably try to get into one of the really good programs at Hereford, at Steneby in Sweden, at SIU Carbondale in the US. I mean, I think to me those would be my top three picks probably. But certainly there are other great schools, you know, RISD in Rhode Island, has a good program. Going for an extended period to one of the big craft schools like Penland that has a fantastic program. Because I think you can, I love seeing what comes out of those schools. I love to see the stu I follow those on Instagram, and there's some really exciting work. So I think that, I would look seriously at going to one of those kinds of institutions. I just think you could skip a lot of the hard knocks learning, probably.
So, the more formal education you have, the better, in other words.
I think so, yeah. And even though, my education, I went to UC San Diego, University of California, San Diego, and the first 2 years I had no idea what I wanted to do. And what I eventually did was sort of sit down with myself and say, okay, if all jobs paid the same, and if I had the same opportunity to get any job, and what would I choose to do? So that I got rid of the idea of doing, it was all about doing it because that's how I wanted to spend my time, right? And what I decided was to become a theater major and start building props. And I feel like for me, that was a great way to decide. So I would say my other advice would be, as you're taking classes, that's a good way to find out if you really enjoy the work. It's very physical. It's what I like about it is that it involves all of yourself. It's physical and it's mental, it's problem solving, it's creative. So all of those things in sort of one package. There are parts of it that are not fun for me at all. Like, I suck at marketing. I used to try to keep track of my, I had a mentor early on who was really a good businessman, besides being a good blacksmith. And so he talked about, like, really keep track of all your time and know how long it takes you to lay something out and drill the holes and all that stuff. I tried working that way.
No.
Suck at that. Totally
No.
suck. And I went to a conference, an Urbana conference, and Francisco Gazichua was demonstrating, who's a amazing Chilean blacksmith sculptor. And one of the things he said was, when I go in my studio in the morning, I throw away time. And I thought, oh my God, I love that. That's so fantastic. And so I stopped keeping track of time after that. And I feel like my work got better, and it also got actually more efficient just because I didn't have this clock ticking over the back of my head, So that's how my works.
I agree. I think anything that makes you forget about time is something that brings you joy and it makes life worth living. Having to focus on the time, I mean, it's like the more you focus on time, the more miserable it, in, misery inducing it becomes. It sort of sucks the joy out of it, I find.
Yeah,
And, I mean, time management is one thing, but I mean, if you have ADD or anything like that, it's a nightmare. And it can just be more anxiety inducing, and it's not a way, it's not a great way to operate.
exactly. Not
It's
for me.
been really validating having this like amazing artisan say, throw time away. Yes.
Get it.
I
So
like that.
my business plan is, this is not for everyone, but so far it's been working for me. I like to make shit, have it go away, and maybe the fairies will feed me. And so far, so good. So, picking a incredibly supportive spouse is that's key.
Yeah.
That was for me.
Someone
You
who
know,
will support your dreams.
yeah, absolutely. And kick your butt if you need it, you know. But
Provide snacks.
yeah.
Talking of the fairies, you mentioned that you were looking at retirement. What's your plan to work
Yeah,
towards
so
retirement?
by retirement, I don't mean not working anymore. I mean not taking commissions anymore.
Yeah.
So I've got, like the huge honey-do list. So my husband's name is Troy. Troy has had four joint replacements. And with everyone, I put in a railing somewhere else where he needs it. So that's sort of how he gets work done. But there are things I would love to do for our house. I'd love to make a railing for inside my sister's house. You know, I have kind of a long list of stuff I want to do.
Yeah.
I also work with a nonprofit blacksmithing collective. We do a lot of hands-on workshops, and I sort of help run that. It's called Adam's Forge. So I will feel a little less guilt about devoting a lot of time to that if I'm not ignoring someone else's project that's out in my teepee, like there is right now.
So Adam's Forge, funnily enough, is how I came across you, because I saw, I think it was either their Instagram account or someone, one of the collectives in the one of the members on their Instagram mentioned yourself, and what caught my eye was your involvement, which is what everyone has been you're itching to hear about in the multi-million dollar series on Disney Plus, The Mandalorian. So everyone's dying to know what you know that like you have said yourself that you don't know anything about the show.
Right.
So for anyone like yourself who may not know, The Mandalorian is a series. I've started to watch season one. I haven't finished it yet. I'm really enjoying it. It's a sci-fi series set in the Star Wars universe before all of the movies that take place, and focusing on a particular character, the Mandalorian. And yeah, so it's an exciting series, and you were approached to be involved, and everyone wants to know, what did you do? What was your part in it?
So I'm good friends with Tony Swatton, who's I don't know if you've had Tony on, but he'd be a really fun person to do actually to have on your podcast because
Okay.
he does lots of arms and armor for movies and TV and videos and all that world. His place is in Burbank. Super generous guy, really incredibly skilled and incredibly fast at his work, which I am not. But it was through him that I got the Mandalorian connection because the season before this, they had Tony do a bunch of the tools and stuff for the Forger. I think that's what they call her. And
Yeah.
hired him as a consultant also to help, show her how to do some stuff. And they actually used him. So Tony is gigantic.
A
He's,
typical blacksmith.
I think he is the yeah, when you look it up in the dictionary, it's Tony. Giant, great big beard, you know, and so they thought they would try to use some of the stuff. So it's Emily Swallow who plays the forge.
Actress, yeah.
Yeah, she's a lovely person. She was really gung-ho about like learning to do as much as she could, but some stuff she just couldn't do. And so they thought, oh, we'll get, you know, she's completely, that character, you don't see any skin at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's completely covered in layers of stuff, including a great big helmet. You can't even see her eyes. There's like a slit that's like green glass that you're looking through. And so they thought, well, they could just show Tony's hands with the tools doing stuff. So they measured Tony's hands, but they didn't measure his forearms. So they had gloves that looked like hers. Made for his hands, but they couldn't get them onto his arms, so they had to like slip them up.
Oh no! I can see where this is going.
So when they approached him to do this again, he's like, why don't you find like a woman blacksmith who might be close to her size? Which yeah. I'm still a head taller than she is. I'm 5'9", and she's, you know, little. But
oh, wow.
It was closer. So they hired me to be the on-set consultant and then to double for her in some of the stuff that was more difficult for her to do, some of the stuff where they wanted more actual forging.
Amazing.
So I worked for 5 days, I think, only really a day and a half or so in costume, thank God.
What was that like?
It was incredibly hot the whole time we were working. So, you know, Southern California, it was like 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It was horrible weather. So, and we did as much as we could. They shot as much as they could without my head in the shot, so that I didn't have to wear the helmet because I couldn't wear my glasses, and you can barely see out that visor in any case. So that was difficult. It's amazing how much CG stuff there is, computer generated stuff there is on the show. So when you walk on the set, there's it's covered with sand, and they actually have a person whose job it is to be the sand wrangler. They like, you know, sweep and get just the right amount of footprints. And
I see. But, it's a bit like one of those Zen gardens, but they have to just maintain it
right. Because the crew comes in and does all this stuff, and there's all these weird footprints that wouldn't be there in the.
Continuity person.
Right. Yeah. Right. But there's like sand continuity person. But so there are some actual, they're not real rocks, but prop rocks. And then there's like a few in the background, but all the rest of the cave that you see that she's in is totally CG. When they turn everything off at the end of the day, it's just blank white walls, and they're in like 2 foot square panels. There's a whole bank of people on computers behind controlling what those rocks look like depending on how the camera's moving, the rocks sort of chain. I mean, it's amazing. So some of the stuff that I would be doing, they would talk about, oh, we can do that in CG. Oh no, we can't do that in CG. We need to have flashes, or, you know, it was weird. It was interesting.
So if anyone asked you to work on, with as a TV consultant again, would you say yes? Or as a, or as a body double?
A week was plenty. It's incredibly boring.
Yeah, it's a lot of sitting around, I imagine.
Yeah, or standing around. You know, there were no chairs to sit in on set, but they sort of needed me to be there in case they had a question. So, I stood around a lot. The money was really good. I mean, for me, for a blacksmith, yeah, the money was great. But so I'd have to, yeah, we'd have to have a discussion about that. I don't know.
So yeah, Emily Swallow was lovely to work with, and she's tiny by the sounds of it. Probably my size by the sounds of things. Okay, so we are, oh my goodness, it's 42 minutes past the hour. We've got a few more minutes for our viewers, as eight of you at the moment. You've been saying some stuff. If you'd like to ask Heather a question, just hit the button at the bottom of your phone screen. It looks like a speech bubble with a question mark in it. Just hit that, ask her any questions, and we will read them out. I'm just going to go through the comments section now and see what people have been saying. I've seen a lot of excited stuff going on in here. Mostly yes, there are, I think. Violet Valkyrie, that's amazing. Love the idea of the inclusive blacksmithing and building the bench together. That was a really sweet story. Abundant Artist, lol. Similar for me in terms of career path. I love sewing, so I did theatre costumes. So your idea about doing theatre, lots of theatre kids, I think, end up doing all kinds of different stuff. It's a good sort of way to find out what it is you want to do. Violet Valkyrie, that's so sweet. I love Emily Swallow, so that's so cool to hear. She was so into the blacksmithing. It's really nice to hear. So which season were you working on? Was it the first season or the second?
I don't know.
Because you don't watch it.
And they shot two or three different episodes, I think. Okay. And they sort of tried to group that, her blacksmithing stuff, all together so that they could kind of do it in one. So it worked with a couple different directors.
But when was that? Was it this year or?
No, last year, I think.
Last year.
Yeah.
We've got some questions. Let's read them out. Lance 95687, how did I not know you were a movie star? Is that one of your one of your acquaintances? You kept that quiet, Heather.
Actually, I assume I can talk about it now because they have a very serious NDA.
Yeah.
Right. That I wasn't allowed to talk about it until the episodes actually aired.
Yeah.
They've aired now, so I
love to talk.
Yeah.
We can say what we want.
I hope so.
We hope so, yeah, we'll find out soon. Jonna, did you ever work with Grogu?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he was there.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and they have to say nothing. Yeah, they have I guess they have one main one, but then they have others, you know, they have more than that, and they do different things, you know, different ones have different capabilities.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess there's the more CGI ones, the ones that walk, the ones that grab stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch them where it takes more than one person to work him. Moving it.
Abundant Artist thinks that those scenes that you worked on were from season 3, so I've got some catching up to do before I get to those scenes. Amazing, says Jonna. I've got another question popped up in here. Okay, I knew this was coming. Violet Valkyrie, did you get to meet Pedro Pascal? If so, what is he like?
No, I don't think so.
You were only working with Emily.
Yeah, almost all with Emily, and there were a couple other actors in the scenes, but I don't know who they were. Sorry.
Were they also Mandalorians? Were they also wearing helmets?
Know, there was I think there was an actor with that didn't have a helmet on in the scene. I mean, everybody takes theirs off as soon as they can when they're
Oh,
like
yeah, I bet.
shooting, but yeah, I don't remember the other actors, sorry.
Okay, she said I had to ask him. She's a huge fan, so and he is huge. He's even bigger than the show at this point. I don't think he can do any wrong. Any more questions for Heather? Okay, so you were asked again. You don't think you'd do it again because it's a bit. To
If
taxing.
it were, I wouldn't want to do it for an extended period. I mean, Emily Swallow actually has, of course, an actual stand-in.
Yeah.
So there's a woman who looks very much like her, even though she wouldn't have to. But she does need to be the same size and shape, so that Emily doesn't have to stand there to have all the lighting and camera and stuff, cameras and angles and stuff figured out. It's a really kind of taxing job. I would
Yeah.
never want that. To do what I did and go in for a few days and stand around for, I can stand around for a few days, but then
Not as a
I'd be,
full-time job.
yeah. Definitely not.
Really, like you say, the stand-in, I look at it as like it's similar to when someone is posing for an artist. That is
Yeah.
hard. That's hard work. You think it's just keeping still? I've done it once. I sat for somebody once a couple of years ago, and it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you can still understand why they do it
And
when they
she
ask the actor to do all of it.
Yeah. And she's also asked to move in, you know, it's the way that the forger moves is very stylized. You know, it's very which was an issue actually for forging because they wanted me to forge slowly, which is realistic. If you're working hot, you know, strike while the iron is hot. There's a reason there's
Yeah.
that. But she moves in a very sort of stiff
Liberate way.
and yeah, really deliberately, really slowly. And I would want to be like getting shit done, you know, and they're like, no, slow down.
Yeah.
So her stand in when they're figuring stuff out, she has to move in the same way that Emily does,
Yeah.
right? Also taxing.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's a really good place for us to wrap things up. It's really fascinating hearing about your career, how you got into this, and all of the projects that you've been involved in and how you ended up becoming an artist in a teepee, making all kinds of wonderful things for people. And of course, your involvement in this amazing show, which is fascinating. And I thank you, Heather, for your time. Thank you for coming on the show and speaking to all of us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform. or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.